This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Indeed you are. Now we have another emeritus professor. That's two in a row. Isn't that amazing?
It is.
David Rowe, emeritus professor, cultural research, the Institute for Culture and Society, Western Sydney University. Now, I know that the issue that we're going to talk about here, the FIFA Women's World Cup and politics in sport, and David published an article in The Conversation, I think about the 17th of July. But I know that Paul's fascinated by this subject, in fact, he organised this guest. So I'm going to defer to Paul and Isaac for this segment.
Thank you, Macca.
When I retire as host, will I be an emeritus host?
Maybe you could be.
Is that what I'll be if I retire as host?
I have to tell people that emeritus is not Latin for old. It's distinguished.
Distinguished. Oh, okay.
I'm not sure you could be emeritus if it's distinguished, Macca.
Distinguished, yeah. I might have to go with...
So, David, my apologies. My voice isn't too great today. Just give us a quick rundown, David, on your article, because it covered quite a lot of bases.
Oh, yes, okay. Well, thanks. Yes, I wrote a piece in The Conversation, as you say, in the week that the FIFA Women's World Cup was about to start. And essentially, it's about the politics of the tournament. As you may know, there's this kind of long-standing mantra that sport and politics shouldn't or don't mix, etc. And I pointed out all the political implications of this event. It's being held in the Southern Hemisphere for the first time. It's been held by two confederations, that's Oceania and Asia, where Australia is located, football-wise, and a whole series of negotiations ranging from should Visit Saudi be a sponsor to the armbands worn by the captains with various messages, such as the One Love message, which is effectively banned. I mean, all these kinds of questions, and it even started straight away when the Brazilian team flew in with messages for freedom for women in Iran on the body of the plane.
So how do you think the authorities have managed that so far, David? Do you think they've done a good job between trying to get it to be focused on football and keep the politics out, or do you reckon they're actually erring on the side of caution?
Well, I think the authorities have always been uncomfortable with affirmations of politics by the athletes or the footballers in this case. They don't mind their own forms of politics, usually. Bodies like world governing bodies like FIFA and the International Olympic Committee have the kind of power that some nation states have, and they're involved in all kinds of diplomatic and political activities, meeting world leaders and brokering deals and so on. They're not so happy when it comes from below. And there's been lots of anxiety, for example, over social media policies, as well as whatever messages that players and coaches and so on might want to project. So at the moment, it's holding. I think it was perhaps more a little more tense at the last year's Men's World Cup in Qatar. But at the moment, for example, they've allowed the indigenous flags to be displayed, which is a first in the World Cup. So they're kind of holding it together for the moment. And I notice that the players are also engaged in various forms of if you like, underhand politics, sneaky politics. Okay, well, you can you can ban the One Love armband, but you can't ban rainbow undercuts in hairstyles or rainbow-coloured fingernails.
David, do you think that in the future perhaps it would change, or would it stay the same?
Change in terms of...
In terms of the team players could advocate what they stand for in the field.
Well, yes, I mean, they can to some degree, but yes, it's limited. I mean, I think the I don't think that the governing bodies are ever going to give away their right to kind of control the messages from a tournament like the World Cup as much as they can. And of course, not all political messages are progressive. So there are some questions there as to when a political message which is projected may be in a relationship of conflict with the values of the organisation. So if, for example, a footballer turned up with projecting messages which were, say, homophobic, that would be a problem. So this is a bit of the tussle that's going on. Can messages be projected, and if so, which kinds?
David, it's a bit sweet for an organisation like FIFA to have, policies around, not making things political when they've had a history of corruption, bad practices, and, even down to the basics of equal pay for female football and male football. So hypocrisy like strikes true. Just the pay one is an interesting one. Do you think they'll capitulate and try and get equality of pay? I think one of the big stories was they don't get the numbers in women's football, but clearly this tournament has disproved that policy.
Yes, I share your sense of irony there about FIFA. It's some ignoble history in various respects. Suddenly turning itself into a paragon of virtue. It is an issue that, I mean, FIFA has committed to equal pay, equal prize money for the next Women's World Cup. And it got very angry before the event started, because for the first time it disaggregated the past rights of women's football from men. So before, it would sell the rights to the Men's World Cup for an awful lot of money, and they'd throw the women's rights in as a kind of sweetener, a bonus, or whatever you want to call it. This is the first World Cup where it's actually unbundled the women's rights, broadcast rights, and FIFA, surprise, surprise, was disappointed by the amount of money that was offered by the broadcasters. It was between 1% and 10% of that of the men. Now, as has been pointed out, that's kind of not really surprising, given that FIFA itself has not exactly been advocating strongly for women's sport historically, women's football historically, and it's not surprising that that the various media companies will bridle, as they would see it, having to pay twice when once they only had to pay for a single amount. So there's a lot going on in this area, and as well as where the future World Cups will be. There is, of course, an attraction of illiberal regimes, including Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and China, all of which are very keen on getting the World Cup. And then that brings in that concept, I'm sure you've heard of, the sports washing. To what degree is FIFA complicit with allowing illiberal regimes to burnish their image via football?
That's really interesting, David. But one thing I did want to mention is that recently I saw an ad on YouTube where this marketing agency actually photoshopped a man's face onto the female players just to get people to watch them. And it got a lot of views, actually. And then at the end, they actually photoshopped it back to the original footage to show that it's actually female players that are playing, and that got like a huge traction. And that's really interesting, I think, how gender kind of plays into sports as well.
Yes, that was a very interesting exercise, and it shows how we're kind of programmed to assume, historically we're programmed to assume excellence in men's sport and rather lesser level of competence amongst women. But that was a clever device. And one thing we've seen in this World Cup, and in not just in football, but in other sports like cricket, we've seen real advances in the quality of women's play because of professionalism. I mean, essentially, women have been amateurs largely. They, you know, they've had to, you know, fit in with other jobs and family responsibilities and all that, not being able to devote themselves to sport and not getting the best pitches to play on, the best coaches, the best health support and all that. Now that started to happen in women's sport, you're really seeing an extraordinary levels of excellence, which also happened in the men's game a century ago, certainly, when men became professionals. Now, I would caution one matter there, though, which is that I would be very distressed if I saw women's sport as it professionalizes and commercializes come to mimic, you know, the kind of inequality, the kind of arrogance and fixation on money, capital and revenue that we've seen in men's sport. So that itself is, I think, a difficult passage to manage.
David, we're running out of time. We'd be remiss of us not to talk about the actual football. So the Matildas performance, where do you think the last 12 is going to go in the next couple of weeks?
Yes, well, I'm a sociologist, not a sports expert, so this is my talk rather than my expert talk, and I have to say that this may get me taken off air, but I'm actually support the Lionesses, the English team, because that's my origin. I think that, I mean, it's been an extraordinary tournament, really, in that you've seen major teams like Brazil and Germany and Canada knocked out, and so there's a great surprise, you know, a team like Jamaica, for example, has done extraordinarily well. The Matildas, you might recall, were virtually written off after one bad result against Nigeria. Suddenly they had a good result and they're back on again. This is a kind of emotional toing and froing you get in a big tournament. The United States, the dominant team for well over a decade, almost went out of the tournament by, as we say, a coat of paint. The Portuguese almost knocked them out in the last minute, but the ball hit the post and bounced out. So it's an extraordinarily open tournament. I'm not going to predict who's going to win. As an England fan, I'm inherently pessimistic about my team's prospects.
As we all are from England.
And maybe, yeah, Matildas are too. But one thing that I think we can be sure is going to be a really exciting ride leading up to the final in the middle of the month.
David, thank you ever so much. I mean, that was a pretty good summary for a passive watcher there. We were talking with David Rowe, Emeritus Professor of the Cultural Research Institute at Western Sydney University. Thank you for joining us. And enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you. I enjoyed our chat. Bye.
Thanks. You're on Saturday Magazine with Maka, Isaac and myself, Paul. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with...
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.